Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another exciting week. A lot of things happening in the world, mostly bad things. It's rare that we hear good news any longer, and I wish we would start hearing some good news. I'm becoming increasingly concerned about what's going on in our country and our world, I am sure, as much as you are. Tonight, I'm going to primarily cover income inequality. Income inequality, a major issue, definitely in the presidential elections coming up in 2 years, an issue in the congressional elections coming up in 2 months. So that's what we're going to start addressing, and I want you, if you would, please, to bear with me, because I'm going to point out some of the things that have occurred politically, financially, that don't make sense and do make sense. I'm trying to share with you my thoughts as to why we have income inequality today. If you wish to join in and call and ask me a question, share your opinions with me, whether you agree with me, disagree with me, it's immaterial. I am happy to hear from you. The number is on the screen in front of you, 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. Everything was pretty good, relatively fine in the United States up until the recession, which had its rumblings in 2007 and hit us badly in 2008. The problem is we're told the recession is over because, look, the Dow Jones is up, the S&P 500 is up, the market's thriving, people are making money. Well, the only problem is not everyone is making money. We have the 1% and 99%, as you well know. And it's the 1% that's making the money, and the 99% are still experiencing the recession that began in 2008. Things really have not improved. And if this continues this way, if it continues not to get better for the 99%, it could be the beginning of the end of this country as we know it. So let me share with you now what I see, what I understand as to why we are where we are today with this 1%, 99% thing, income inequality. First of all, and this is most interesting, the average net worth of a person dropped 43% since 2007. Did you hear me? Average net worth has dropped 43% since 2007. Half of the people in the United States, half of the working people in the United States, earn less than $27,520 per year. $27,500 per year. Half of the people in this country make less than $27,500 a year. I apologize for the repetition. I want to drive it home. You tell me how someone making $27,500 a year can make a mortgage payment, a car payment, okay? Pay health insurance, provide food and clothing for the family, basics. Next to impossible. Now the wife has to go to work, okay? And eventually both of them are working 2 to 3 jobs a year. There is no middle class in this country today. It has been successfully eliminated by the 1%. There was another time when we had this 1%, 99% situation. And guess when? 1928, 1 year before the biggest recession ever, 1921 when the market fell, bad, 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 1 year before, we were at 1% and 99% again. And no one really paid attention, okay? And look what happened. There are 46.2 million people living in poverty in this country today. 46.2 million people living in poverty in this country today. At a time when corporate profits are at the highest level seen in decades, okay? And why did this happen? Why are corporate profits today? This is one of the most interesting things I'm going to share with you this evening. Why are corporate profits at the highest level seen in decades today? The reason, my friends, is because of reductions in wages and benefits. You heard me. Corporate profits are very high because corporate America has reduced wages and benefits, okay? And that's the way it is. Now, from 1992 to 2007, wait till you hear this, 1992 to 2007, the top 400 earners, income earners in this country, saw their income increase 392%. Not bad. Your pay goes up over a period of 20 years, 392%. That's a good deal. And at the same time, they saw their tax rate reduced 37%. Their income went up 392%. Their tax rate was reduced 37%. That's for the guys at the top, folks, not the guys in the middle or at the bottom. Okay? Thank you, Bush, too, for that tax rate reduction. Now, since 2008 and the recession, since the recession of 2008, only the wealthy have received raises. The average American worker has seen no boost in his paycheck. Over a period of the last 6 years, only the wealthy have received raises. The average American worker has not seen a boost in his paycheck. Now, politics ties into all this, and this is very important. And some of the things I'm going to share with you now are going to be eye-openers. Stay with me. Listen closely. I'm going to bring politics into this now because that's all part of the game what these guys are doing in Washington. First of all, who owns your congressman? We all know. Corporate America owns your congressman. Politics is big business. Money talks. And the most perfect example of how our congressmen today are owned by corporate America is Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor was majority leader in the Congress. Eric Cantor had a primary. Nobody ran against him. Knocked him on his ass. Eric Cantor lost at his primary recently. He resigned his job as majority leader, said he was going to stay in Congress till the end of the year. He did not. He resigned effective August 18th. And why did he resign? Because he took a job with a boutique bank, his starting salary, $3.45 million. His first year's salary, $3.45 million. He's going to work for a bank, the bad guys in this situation. The banks in corporate America are the bad guys in our society today. And look at that. I mean, he went from $172,000 or $173,000 a year to $3.45 million a year. What kind of favors did he do for the banks in corporate America while he was in office? A lot. We all knew it. Look how it paid off for him. Now, another interesting thing about Eric Cantor, somebody's going to do a movie on this guy someday or write a book. While he was majority leader in the Congress of the United States, his wife was on the payroll of Goldman Sachs and New York Private Bank and Trust. I repeat, his wife was on the payroll of two of the biggest banks in the country, especially Goldman Sachs, of Goldman Sachs and New York Private Bank and Trust. Another interesting thing. I'm staying in the political sphere because they control things. We don't control our congressmen anymore. Government of the people, by the people, for the people, is a thing of yesterday. We've got to get it back. And until we do, we're going to stay 1%, 99%. So let me show you how it's been working now in recent years for corporate America. Starting around the year 2000, okay, business groups, I'm talking about corporate America bankers, business groups employed 30 times as many Washington lobbyists as trade unions. Business groups employed 30 times as many lobbyists, Washington lobbyists, as trade unions. And they employed 16 times more lobbyists than labor consumer and public interest groups combined. Take labor, consumer interest groups, public interest groups, tie them together, and business, corporate America, still had 16 times rather more lobbies out there than the groups representing what today is the 99%. From 1998 to 2010, business interests and trade groups, I'm talking about corporate American banks again, spent $28.6 billion on lobbyists, $28.6 billion on lobbyists over a 12-year period, compared to $492 million by labor. Labor spent $492 million on lobbyists. Corporate America spent $28.6 billion, okay? A 60-to-1 advantage for business. You heard me. A 60-to-1 advantage for business. Now, I've already gone over congressmen like Eric Cantor. He leaves Congress. He goes to work for, you know, a bank or corporate America. He becomes generally a lobbyist. Eric Cantor has many friends in Washington. He's going to be a big help to the bank he's going to work for with his connections. There should be a law against people leaving Congress and immediately going to work for a group that they are going to be out there seeking favor for from their former colleagues in Congress. Let's have at least a 2 or 4 year lapse in between. I'm not trying to take the job away from these guys. I think they benefited enough while they sat as a public official. Now we're going to stay with politics for a moment more, and I'm going to talk about presidents. You may find this shocking what I'm going to share with you now. Presidents. Under Democratic presidents, starting with Truman, the greatest gains, okay, the greatest income gains were at the bottom of the scale and tapered off as income rose. Under Democratic presidents, starting with Truman, the greatest income gains were at the bottom of the scale and tapered off as income rose. Whereas under Republican presidents, gains concentrated at the top. They were the biggest at the top, are the biggest at the top, and taper off as the income scale moves down. So the rich get richer under the Republicans and the poor poorer, whereas under the Democrats, at least the poor have a chance of earning a living wage. Now, unions. Unions have something to do with this. You know, unions got too big. They had to get cut back. They were too powerful. There's a pendulum with everything in this country. A pendulum swings. People get too powerful. You got to cut them back. They become very weak and can't be that helpful. But then a need arises for them again because the opposition gets too powerful, and that group has to become stronger and does become stronger. Well, with regard to the unions, the inequality in income is directly related, okay, to union, the size of unions. You heard me. The inequality in income is directly related to the size of unions. Because the bigger the union is, they're working for more people. And what do they work for? Higher wages, higher, more benefits. And labor membership in 19 has dropped from 20% in 1983 to 12% in 2007, enough to have had an impact on helping the 99%. They are out there basically without a voice. Okay, now, where am I now here? I want to talk about, this is terrific too, what I'm going to share with you right now. There is a magazine, let's start with the magazine, called Foreign Affairs. It's a publication of the policy-setting Council on Foreign Relations. Now, they're a big deal. They're a big think tank. They're very important. They are very influential. Not only are they into foreign relations, they understand money, because money now is a worldwide universal thing. And they know what's going on, and their publication, Foreign Affairs, carried an article in the issue that is out right now in the September-October issue, and the article had to do with the Federal Reserve. The Council on Foreign Affairs advised the Federal Reserve. They're the ones that loan the money out to the banks, and then the banks are supposed to loan the money out to us. They said that the Federal Reserve, okay, it was time for the Federal Reserve to drop money directly into the hands of the 99% and skip the banks. Why is this? Because now the money goes from the Federal Reserve to the banks. The banks then are supposed to loan it to Main Street. But the banks keep it in Wall Street, okay? They keep it for themselves, the banking pro. They don't loan the money out, spread the money out to the working public. And here the Council on Foreign Relations says, we've got to stop this. It's one of the things destroying our economy. And here's why. Just listen to what I'm going to say, and it makes so much sense. The central banks should give money directly to the people, the council said. Give the money directly to the people, bypass the banks. Because what do the banks do? The banks only put the money in an interest-bearing account in the Federal Reserve, in their own name, okay, and the profits go back to them, and then they take those profits and put them in offshore accounts to avoid taxes. The Federal Reserve today loans money to the banks at a very, very cheap rate, next to nothing. They're supposed to give it to us. They don't. They keep it for themselves, and it's not against the law. And they deposit it in interest-bearing accounts where they're making a decent dollar on it. And then they take that money, and because they don't want to pay taxes on it, the 1% never wants to pay taxes on their money, they put the profits in offshore accounts because they don't want to take taxes. They are avoiding taxes. Now, this is even more interesting. Guess what? The president last night, President Obama, hosted a private dinner at the White House, a private dinner with the members of the Council on Foreign Relations, a group of foreign policy and financial experts. He had them over for a private dinner. Now, I don't think this is going to help what was contained in the article I've just told you about in Foreign Affairs, because unfortunately, I don't think Obama has done right with the American public when it comes to the banks and to the people. He has sided with the banks consistently. He has not made a move, really, that would help the 99%. Very simple. You tell me what bank or banker has been, what banker has been indicted, what banker has gone to jail. The banks were too big to let them go without assistance, and the banks are too big to prosecute, we're told. BS. Get them. You should put these people in jail. I read a major article today somewhere on the Internet that no one goes to jail from the banks. They committed some of the worst crimes in the history of this country. So I don't think the fact that the president had dinner with this group last night is going to make any difference, because I am very disappointed in how he has dealt with the banks over the last 6 years. They are his friends, not his enemies. He's taking care of them. I don't know why. This always happens, by the way, to our big-time elected officials. They end up sucking up to the banks, probably because the banks suck up to them. And in the end, a 99% gets hurt. A couple of other little observations here about this 1% and 99%. There was a study recently that showed that babysitters average an hourly rate twice the national minimum wage. They make twice the national minimum wage per hour. I find this, I don't think that's true. I think they make more in some places. In Key West here, my daughter Lisa periodically needs a babysitter. It's $20 an hour. You could go out to dinner with your husband for 2 or 3 hours, you're spending $40 or $60 just for a babysitter. This study said that the average hourly rate for a babysitter was not $20, it was $12.75. And in the Northeast, it was more expensive, $15.50 an hour, whereas the minimum wage is only $7.25. The article further pointed out that what parents are doing today, because they can't afford the hourly rate that is for babysitters as it has become, that they are bundling their children. In other words, three couples that get together, decide, they're all going out on the same night. They may be going to a different place. They hire one babysitter, pay her just a straight hourly rate, not times three, and have one sitter watch all three children, okay? To save money, parents are splitting the cost on babysitters. Another problem with this 1%, 99%. New York City and the homeless. New York City and the homeless. As of January 1st this year, the homeless in shelters in New York City, 53,615. I repeat, 53,615. That's more people than can fit in Yankee Stadium, okay? That doesn't include the homeless in New York City who are not in shelters but are sleeping in street, in on the street. This is just another example of the American dream gone bad. Sure, we had homeless before 2008, but we never had as many homeless as we have today in this country. Okay, I want to talk about for 1 second this issue, and this has to do with the economy also. Long-term unemployment. Long-term unemployment is double what it was before 2008. In other words, there's twice the number of people who are not employed long-term today than there were at the start of the recession. This is not just in the United States. This is a worldwide unemployment average. Long-term unemployment has increased since 2008 85%. More than 16 million people are out of work and have been out of work for at least a year just in the first quarter of 2014 this year. And that number, 16 million, okay, is up 8.7 million from 2008 for the same first quarter of the year. You know, they say, you know, the economy's great, but again, it's only great for the wealthy 1%. The 99% are suffering grossly. There's more to talk about, more to share about income inequality, but I think I've made my point and I put enough out there and it's food for thought, I hope. I want to talk about Detroit for a moment. We know Detroit's into bankruptcy. They're on trial right now before the bankruptcy judge. We hear that the poor people left living in Detroit, they can't pay their $1,500 water bills. The water company turns off their water. The United Nations has said you can't turn somebody's water off. It's like it's a human need, a human right. The right to water is a human requirement. You can't do it, but they do it. They also have said the United Nations, they're saying this about our country, a major city in our country. They're saying they believe there is discrimination against blacks in Detroit because of this and other things that are happening. Let me talk about safety for a minute in Detroit. And I'm not talking police safety. I'm talking about the fire department, okay? Now, you know how firemen, they live in their firehouses. And an alarm goes off and a bell rings and they run to their trucks and they go and for some reason it's all set up electronically. They know where they have to go and get to fast. No more in Detroit. It hasn't been that way for years. The firemen don't have the sophisticated systems they had or because they couldn't maintain them or other cities have. What has occurred in Detroit is the firemen have gotten together and they've made with their own hands emergency alert equipment, which, and you know how they do it? And you think of what you did when you were a child when I tell you this. They're using soda cans, okay? Door hinges, pipes, and doorbells. Can you remember when you were a kid, you took two soda cans, punched a hole in each end, put a string in, maybe 50 feet long, and then you talk to a friend over that soda can. This is the kind of thing they're doing in Detroit to bring to their attention there is a fire and there is a need for them. If this isn't an example of American decline, I don't know what it is. Someone recently wrote an article, I can't remember where, and said that America, because of things similar to this, is becoming a third world country. I wonder, and I ask you, is it? Are we on our way? I don't know. And what bothers me more is no one seems to care or pay attention. We've got to stop this movement downward in this country where people are being defecated upon. We've got to turn it around because we cannot survive if we don't. That's my opinion. I'm talking surviving as a nation. Let's go to ISIS. ISIS is all over the news. Apparently, tomorrow night, the president's talking to us at 9 o'clock. We're going to be, to some degree, at war more than we have with ISIS. I don't know if it's going to be a big war. I don't think so. But whatever it's going to be, some people are saying ISIS is not a threat. The Islamic State is not a threat to the United States. They're not here. They're in Iraq. They're in Syria. They're not going to come here. We're only afraid because of 9/11. It happened once. We think it can happen again. The United States is not in imminent danger of harm. I don't buy it. Maybe you do. Reasonable minds can disagree. All I know is this. I don't want another 9/11, and then I don't want my political leaders, my governmental leaders saying, oh, my God, I didn't think it would happen, okay? Because I believe it can happen, and it's going to happen. It only takes a couple of hands to come over here and blow something up. They don't have to send an army to invade and land troops and have airplanes. It's simpler than that. They get on an airplane, like everyone else. They come over here as a visitor, and before you know it, they're going to blow something up. Remember this, my friends. Prevention is worth a pound of cure. We've got to pay attention to this ISIS threat. Now, how are we going to pay attention to it? Obviously, we're going to bond. I read something today that bothers me very much because I don't like this. I read today that we keep saying we're not going to put any soldiers on the ground. We're not going to put any American troops on the ground. We're not going to put boots on the ground. But, you know, there's always a backdoor way of doing things. I came across an article today that said already the United States government, okay, are looking at United States contractors. The United States Air Contracting Command is soliciting United States contractors, private mercenaries, you heard me, private mercenaries, to go do the fighting over there in Iraq and Syria, okay? This way, we don't have American boots on the ground. These are just hired hands. Corporate America provides mercenaries today. The military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. They provide troops. We pay them X number of dollars, and they send soldiers over to fight, and not even in our name, but they're fighting for our cause. And they are now recruiting, right now, contractors, mercenaries, for 1 year of duty in Iraq. That's my show for tonight. I wish I had more time. Every week I wish I had more time. I've enjoyed chatting with you tonight. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you've learned something or appreciate my comments. You don't have to agree with them again. All I seek to do is stimulate your thinking on the issues because we must think about these things or we're going to be in deep trouble than we are. The show of mine, as you know, is archived immediately. It's also available on YouTube and Facebook. You can read it, and people listen to it. More people listen to this show on the archive version and on YouTube and Facebook than are listening tonight. And I thank all of you, whatever way, whatever you do listen to it, for listening to it. As you're aware, I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. If you enjoy this show, buy my book, Amazon.com. BarnesandNoble.com, The World Upside Down. If you did not enjoy the show, don't buy the book. You will not enjoy it. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to being with you again next week. Good night.